Maybe you disagree, but you know, not on a philosophical issue, but on some clear, well-defined and technical matter. And in some sense, I already see in my perspective, I mean, the disclaimer is that I'm not a specialist of William's work. Alex is here to help us. I'm not a specialist of ADS-CFT. There's plenty of people here, and I have many questions for you guys, and I hope we go into the discussion. I pretend to be a bit, to know something about the first one, gravity, so I wanted to add this kind of work, but already what I realized is that by trying to merge even the two subjects, well, it's not really the two subjects, it's in some sense supposed to be about the same object, but since there are different perspectives, in some way, the perspective of ADS-CFT or some questions that somehow seems completely natural or answerable in the CFT side are for me, you know, deep puzzle. And the fact that they are an answer or a conjecture, you know, is really helping me into thinking about my problem. So maybe the same thing for you on the readers, that somehow, you know, having a different perspective on the box, the gravity might have. And I hope we start to have a discussion on that. Let me start by some. So I'm going to do some talk about the work of Ruben and we had a seminar yesterday. I want to talk about, let's say, ADS-CFT from a quantum gravity point of view. I really want to understand what that means. In some sense, part of the problem is that that may be five times some quantum gravity computation, but I think at that stage, maybe it would be better for the discussion. So maybe for further, future, then I have a list of questions that I would like to see addressed. I mean, Andy yesterday was mentioning that in 2.1 gravity, there's a very two coupling constant, k left and k right. And he was emphasizing that maybe we should focus on, the highly non-symmetric sector, and maybe we should do that. I will really focus on that talk on the symmetric sector, but maybe we can learn lots of things by really pushing, going to the other. So I will, in my talk, I will really deal with 2+1 gravity, and what I call 2+1 gravity is really that there's only one coupling constant, k left equal k right. So I will restrict to that for the whole discussion. If you start to change that from the gravity point of view, well, it's lots of things are different and confusing. It's not that easy. It's not easier from the CFT point of view.
All right.
Yes.
From what you said, it seems to me that you're saying that Witten's work is kind of a string theory perspective of this problem. But I don't understand why you're saying that. I don't see any string theory in
this book. No, not string theory, but at least a CFT point of view. Well, the perspective, let's say, okay, not I agree, there's no string theory, but the perspective of quantum gravity that comes from this idea of the CFT.
So you're saying that
the ADS-CFT
philosophy.
Yes. So not
really
true.
Oops. I don't know.
Well, I mean, let's say, in the sense that if I think of quantum gravity, I think of it locally at Planck scale in the bulk. But now, ADS-CFT tells me that there is an equivalent formulation.
I know the holographic perspective.
Yeah, and then it gives me a different. I mean, it's a completely different perspective. I was saying on the same problem, I would say. And there are certain questions that are natural here and not there, and vice versa. And by asking, how you match them, because I'm saying that the people working in quantum gravity usually don't have many notions of things.
But I just wanted to say that this is quite prevalent.
Yes. That's the whole point of why we are in the discussion, because a theory, there is one theory which is quantum gravity, and let's look at it that way. Let's say there's a bulk point of view, or that's what I usually call, quantum gravity. That is, how do I think of that, or do people in quantum gravity think of that? In terms of Hilbert space, wave functions, Hilbert equation. So I don't know. Another CFT thing. And of course, these two things should be the one and the same. I mean, we should agree. It should be one and the same thing at the end. So, the perspective I'm going to start with maybe different from Greenham, because what I'm going to start with is that I know what I mean by 3D quantum gravity from the bulk point of view. But a priori, my starting point is that I don't understand the CFT correspondence. So I don't want to assume it. I want to, the fact that it should exist in some way is a guide to look in certain direction, but in that sense, it's kind of different from Newton's point of view. Alex talked yesterday was more in between.
Well, maybe when it was you told us more precisely exactly what you mean by bulk quantum gravity.
Okay, yeah, I try. You should ask the question. So first let me start with the, okay, so there's this, question. Another question that I want to ask you is supposing that I know exactly what sort of question from gravity, what would even I would like to have it constitute a proof of the ADS-CFT correspondence in that case. That is what I'm, what would be, what is, let's say, in order to do that, I really need to know what is exactly the precise dictionary that people expect. And the dictionary I need is a dictionary between Lorentzian, quantum gravity, and maybe a CFT, or a classic CFT, because in order to do some computation quantum gravity, I have to assume what exactly ADS-CFT is telling me, but in some sense, you know much more than me, so I hope at the end of this discussion we could agree that, in principle, knowing what computation I can do on the CFT, there should be a prescription in the bulk that gives me the same answer, and I would love to have that we agree on what is exactly this dictionary. Given this dictionary, then you can try to prove from one side or the other what you would do. Another nice thing, let me just be before you see the introduction, another nice thing about these things that, here I'm emphasizing, I'm talking about Lorentzian quantum gravity. That is, when I talk about quantum gravity, a priori today, I don't know any quantization of 2 plus 1 gravity that corresponds to a Euclidean correlation, so to an exponential minus SVG. Right? Lorentzian, I really mean that I'm summing over this guy. But, it has been this idea that has been around for a while that maybe there is a notion of Euclidean quantum gravity. And in the semi-classical limits, it kind of worked very well. So what would be one outcome of these things that if you could make a correspondence between Lorentzian bulk quantum gravity and a CFT, the CFT is a unitary TFT, you can decodate, there is no problem. In the gravity side, there's no well-defined notion of public rotation that really works. But if you have a CFT, you can decodate, and this guy, in some sense, will give you a definition for Euclidean quantum gravity. That is, there should be, if you take already the answer of Euclidean quantum gravity, then you can go back and ask, okay, what what is the definition of the clear primarily? So that would be, for me, a big outcome, because this idea that maybe it's possible to recreate gravity in some way that is meaningful, it would be very useful if it was true, extremely useful. So, you know, even if it's a simple system, I personally, you know, I would learn something drastically new there, which is, what does it mean to do a Euclidean quantum gravity?
Can I just ask a very nice question? Is it possible to define correlation functions using e to the power ies?
In 2 plus 1, there's a certain number of things that you can do. There is, you can, solve the Wiedel-Levitt equation exactly, and compute the vector state. Then you can construct a certain number of physical observables that, for instance, measure geometrical entities. Suppose you have a torus, you can ask what is the minimum radius of the torus inside that. And then you can somehow extract all possible physical information about your quantum gravitational system from this point of view. Now, the observable, since there are no kind of low, you know, different ground observable on local, so you don't have any kind of local observable that you can compute, except when we're going to look at this case, except when you're in the ADS space and you have asymptotic infinity, because in some sense there you have a place where you can pinch things. So in 2 plus 1, I mean, there's been some work to make sense of that one here.
So what makes you think that
your critical
point about
you
may not make sense in general?
I'm not saying that it doesn't make sense. I'm just saying I would love to have
There seems to be a very naive way to think about it just by saying something over
Then you have the conformal factor problem. So, if you try this way, do we really want to enter a discussion about why Euclidean quantum gravity is nice, but unless people are really...
I think many of us still don't know exactly the formalism or the framework in which you want to work. And so maybe as an aside somewhere you can say...
I would say the things that bugs me in three lines are, if you sum over geometry, there's a conformal factor problem. If you look at it from the Hamiltonian point of view, one of the equations of motion is a constraint, and one of the integration variables is a lapse. And the Hamiltonian constraint is, unbounded from below, and that's related. And the third point of view, if you look at the auto-locking wave functional, is that it's solved an equation, but this equation is not the variable integration. So I can't really match them properly. But I think,
when you talk about your perspective.
At the semi-classical level.
So I guess that third point is something that's new to me. And maybe if you have a chance later, if you could.
I write down the
filter. You don't have to do it if it's not what you were planning on.
Yeah.
I actually, maybe something related to what people said. I actually also want to see exactly new formulas when you say it. So this is a place where I cannot talk about Euclidean geometry anymore.
Yeah. Well, essentially, I will talk about Chern-Simons conformation. I'm just saying technically, nobody else has done it. So.
There is no way of thinking about relativity.
I wish there is a way. And in fact, this idea is CFT. What it's telling me is that there is a way, right? So I believe, if you prove that, I believe that, then I believe there is a way. But I just don't know it, and nobody else has done it. I would love to see a version of Euclidean relativity. Just some preliminary, I'm interested in this kind of action, groups, very good action. So there's one part, and this is going to be a ES space, As you know, I can write this this action invariant in terms of a chance assignment theory. That would be one key input. That is, I can define an SL to R connection, which is essentially A plus 1 plus minus E. And then we can show that, and from there, I can define the chance assignment action. And the gravity action basically is equivalent to a difference of two chance assignments action. So that goes back to the width and natural function. When I was mentioning the scalar typical here, right, is that in some sense you can take a different coupling constant for the left part of the chance assignment and the right part of the chance assignment. But if you really want this action, then you take that. If you put different coupling constants, you will have an additional chance assignment term for omega and E here. So A is a one-form value in SL to R. E is the Weierbaeck frame field, so that is the metric. You know, E is something which contains EA, DXA, I, GI, which is the generators of SL to R, and this is just the line element. And the metric is, of course, IA, and okay, this is the usual way. And omega is the scale connection. Okay, so this is gravity. So, I mean, here it's written in the first order formalism. When you solve an equation of motion for omega and you put back a solution, then you get the second order formalization, which is a usual gravity. One of the key things about
second, this is a fine thing to do, but if you start thinking quantum mechanically,
you may worry,
for example, that there are Jacobian factors that occur if you did a change of variables. The related problem is whether or not the metric is convertible, things like that.
I hope.
So is your point of view that you just...
No, I'm going to mention that. I mean, this is one of the... I'm going to mention that concerning the Jacobian factor, I think I can even address that if I find another say. But we'll have to worry about that. And I will say what we know and what we don't know. Let me just go on at the classical level. So the classical level, we're interested in ADS-CST because Andy was saying this beautiful result by Bowen and Leno. That says that if you look at the charge that generates diffeomorphism, space diffeomorphism and time diffeomorphism, you have to specify a sensitive boundary condition. And then you can show that at the classical level, what's remarkable is that it's a classical level, the charge, this asymptotic charge, develops a central charge. The algebra, so this is the Poisson algebra of conserved charge, is equivalent to classical Virasoro, with a central charge which is C, which is 3L over G. Okay? And we work all the time in this coupling constant K. Which is, so in terms of K, this is 6 K here. The convention I use for K, I was confused by that, are the conventions which are standard in the literature of, I mean, which are established in the literature of Wesel-Milhaud-Witten and chance assignment theory. These are not the convention of Witten, so the K here is 4 times the K of Witten. I'm using this one because the back, I mean, the majority of the literature is using this convention. The nice thing about this theory of boson gravity is that it has black hole, so let me So, you know, when you get at ABS in two-person dimension, it goes, you know, it's a portion of ABS, which is a set which is a cylinder, and this is asymptotic infinity. Now, the thing in two-person gravity is that any solution is just locally flat. And that means that somehow any geometry is just obtained by a quotient of ADS space by a subgroup of symmetry. So in order to see what the subgroup is, what you can start to do is to write down the metric for the BTZ plateau. This metric is characterized by essentially, because I have a Virasoro algebra, I have a notion of preferred energy, which is L0 and L0 plus and L0 minus. And the BTZ black hole is just characterized, once you fix the value of this object, then you obtain a classical solution. So usually, if you fix this value to be 1/2, Ln plus or minus g, then what you're going to construct is a BTZ black hole of mass n and angular momentum g. You can write down the metric for this object. I'm using coordinate to adapt it to the transcendent conversion plus N2 16 G plus minus U V, where rho is a radial direction, and then U V is just T plus or minus pi. Okay. And the identification comes from the phi of phi is equal to phi plus 2 pi. So
this is something that confuses me. So the transcendence formulation, these transcendence fields, the action is topological, so it doesn't depend on the metric of the background, but it does depend on the topology of the background. And the BTZ black hole has a different topology than empty ABS space.
Yes.
So yes. I think it's not entirely clear to me that, in order to define the transcendence action, I need to fix the topology of space. And so
it's, yes. Yes. Yes.
You know, BTZ so black hole has two boundaries and some points from the so it's not clear to me that from the transcendence point of view, it's in the same system. It's,
I think it is. There is. What you can ask is, you can look for manifolds.
From the Euclidean point of view, it's very clear that they're quite different. But from the Lorentzian point of view, I think it's true.
Okay, let me try to describe the topology of this guy and then say which way you try the thing is that from the transcendence topology, you will fix the topology by saying what is the pi 1 of the magnitude. And then you will look for a representation of that. And then you can classify what are the metric corresponding to the given transcendence representation. And there will be a one-to-one, you will find the. So essentially, the BTZ black hole as a topology or a manifold, it's essentially a function disk that you evolve in time. So if I take forget the time, if I take a topological manifold, some type of function.
No, but the BTZ black hole has two boundaries.
Yeah, the geometrics are interpreted. Yeah, when you flip the. I agree. So let me, a function disk will be. So if I take a function disk, d star times the interval. That's the topology of the manifold I'm looking at. And then on on such manifold, you can ask what is the possible sets of flat set to our connection that I can put. Some of them do correspond to the BTZ black hole. That is, when this I here is time-like, it corresponds to the BTZ black hole. When this I is space-like, it corresponds to some other singular geometry.
But the thing that confuses me is that just from the black hole, the singularity of the BTZ black hole is space-like.
Oh, no, but you, yeah. But you're asking me. No, I agree. But you're asking from the point of view of transcendence. So there's two things. First, you know, I have to fix the topology of the manifold. And the topology of the manifold, it's a notion topological, which has nothing to do with existence of a field on it or a metric.
Sure.
So you can fix the topology of the manifold. And then you can ask, and this is a three-dimensional manifold. Then you can ask, what type of flat receptor structure can I put on that?
I mean, I understand that's a perfectly reasonable question to ask.
Okay.
But it's not clear to me what it has to do with the BTC black hole.
Oh, because the BTC black hole is going to be one of these, it's going to be the solution when I is, you know, when this space time.
No, but the singularity of the BTC black hole is.
Yes, so. I agree. The bunch of these things is space time.
So
well, I'm going to be able to expand the
I'm not sure what you're confused at. I mean, the singularity is just when his disk, the metric that he puts on that, is going to collapse.
Yeah.
So what, why is that?
It's the singular.
So the field, on, I mean, I'm looking at this topological manifold. I put a field on it. And then I can study what is the geometry there, and where are the singularities, and what type of, whether these lines,
the
space like
so if you draw the Penrose diagram of the BTC manifold and tell me where that disk is.
I'm going to show you where the disk is.
I'm going to cross sections, no singularities anymore.
But this is the
right.
Okay. This is the to infinity.
Oh, right.
So, yeah. I mean, there are other solutions where it creates.
Okay.
It's an analogous that you both, I mean, the notion whether you both in time or in space, it comes. You know, once you have put
I didn't
mention
that
it was. Well, essentially, I wanted to say that precisely. So from there, you can construct the autonomy A plus and A minus. The key thing is that A plus depends on U. So you're only on the left mover. It's kind of generic part of this solution. It looks like a petty remark. It's not a petty remark, the mesh, they're all put together. But somehow, the splitting. It's a very general remark we come to like the splitting between where is my black hole? Oh, I know I should never do that. So the splitting between this left and right mover appears to be, you know, gauging ground. When you look at the geometry of it, it also matches with the splitting in terms of conformal structure and right hole structure. I mean you see that here, there is this the fact that the algebra spins into the left and right down. So you can compute the connection, and
if k was 1 equal to k right, then the same solution would hold, or no?
I would have to think about it. Then the geometry, I would have to think about it, because if k is not equal to k right, then you don't have a metric anymore, because the torsion equation would be modified.
I think every solution when k left equals k right is a solution when k left does not.
Okay,
k right.
Maybe, but then also then there are. So, okay, so as I said, the topology I'm looking at is like a 3D manifold, the topology of function disk, you know, or analogous times an interval. So there is only one place where I can compute the non-trivial autonomy, which is around this cycle, right? And the BTC, if you construct this object and compute the autonomy around this cycle, you find that essentially I get two group elements, G plus and minus, which are essentially minus diagonal element minor, where R plus is the event horizon and R minus is the Cauchy horizon of the metric. And in terms of the mass, okay, we can write it on that, you can show that these charges are essentially K with 4 R plus plus or minus R minus squared. experience of the recovered inner and outer horizon. So now if you really want to realize, this is just here a description purely at the Chan Simons level, so at the gravitational level, you know, in the ideal space, I can always, usually I think that this is time here, well, this is time, and then I slice this object here, I get a Poincaré disk, right over the manifold Poincaré disk, and the structure of the PTZ black hole is that if you get a slice in the middle of that, you will find that the interior of the PTZ black hole is this a strip here, where these two sides are identified. Okay, so each slice, so there's two asymptotic regions, the PTZ black hole. This is one infinity here, and this is another infinity there, and this is the you know, an hyperbolic metric. And the length, the minimum length going around, the maximum length going around the net is related to this outwards. Here I'm drawing the one with zero spin. There's not zero spin, it's just the same diagram, but you have to kind of twist everything a bit. And that's exactly, you know, this guy. And this is an element, so I take my input. Okay? This is the infinity and the other infinity. You can even go a bit more precise because you can really find a domain in ADS space for which the black hole is the solution. So the key thing is that the BTZ black hole is not a quotient of this whole thing. You have to take out pieces of this whole thing. The pieces you take out, this is you know, this is where you would say well, there's a singularity. It's not a curvature singularity, but it's a chronological singularity. So you have weird, you know, loops or winding of time. And so the BTZ black hole, usually what you do is that, you know, there's an initial, if you look at this object like that, it starts by, you know, on the initial singularity, which is space-like, stuff like that, then it grows, and then it kind of, you know, goes back to a line. And when the slicing stops there, this is the final singularity of the black hole. And so, you know, there's an initial singularity, there's a final singularity, and then if you look at the, let's say, past micron of these things, so they're just straight line in this diagram, you find that you can construct some type of two tetrahedra like that, and this is somehow the interior of the black hole, I mean, part of the interior of the black hole, and then you have to complete this tetrahedra you know, by doing another tetrahedra here that intersect, you know, infinity. That if, so this is initial singularity, finite singularity, I look at the past, you know, no lights here, the intersect in the middle. And then these points are just endpoints, they just touch nearly asymptotic infinity, but the space can be extended in that direction. And if I develop the boundary, I would get essentially these two asymptotic regions would be the intersection of these tetrahedra on that side. This is the two diamonds there, and you know, and then I have to the identification of in phi, I have to identify phi plus two phi means that I have to identify a streak here. Okay, so the boundary of the BTZ black hole is two cylinders that are pinched at infinity. Okay, and somehow you know, kind of related to by something which is this. Singularity. Okay. I mean, I'm doing that because in the Euclidean case, the geometry is a bit simpler. In the Euclidean case, you just the boundary of Euclidean, the BTZ black hole is just that object. But you see, it's not that different in some sense because Euclidean wants to take this object and you know identify them. And if you look these two half cylinder, you recover the same type of geometry. And then I will, if I have time, use it in another. So one of the key things, and a very puzzling thing in this business, is that I was writing the is that you have to ask what is the vacuum state of the theory. So the Hamiltonian of the theory is L plus plus L minus, and this is essentially the mass of the black hole, right? Maybe it's the mass of the black hole. So you would say, well, then the vacuum state is a black hole of mass zero. But this is not true. Because a black hole of mass zero is a black hole where you don't have an identification here. And this is essentially just a portion of the Hilbert space. It's a primary patch of the Hilbert space. And this is not what you would call the Lacrosse type of a theory. In some sense, you would like to call the Lacrosse type of a theory the full Hilbert space, not just a portion. If you do that, then you realize that full Hilbert space can be written in this metric, but you have to a low negative value of the of the metric of the mass. Okay, so this is the vacuum state. This is the ABS state. So ABS state corresponds to not a mass zero, but a mass minus k over four. And that tells me that in fact I should, you know, I should shift everything by this k over four in order to have so that the vacuum is really at mass equal to zero. If you put the vacuum at mass equal to zero, there seems to be a gap, and then the you know classical black hole starts. You can also ask what is in between, and there are some interesting geometries, but they all have a naked singularity. So there's a wealth of geometry between the vacuum state here and the black hole state. But classically, they are singular, so we don't talk about them. And this is an important point because
the Brown and Nance find a set of classical geometries without singularities that lie between the vacuum and the zero mass black hole. You just act on the empty ABS with a diffeomorphism that doesn't vanish sufficiently quickly at the boundary.
Oh, okay. I was thinking from the. Yeah.
So, this is.
Well, I think, yes.
This is one of the points of what I was trying to discuss yesterday.
Well, there is, so because, okay, video is nice.
I think this phrase of interpigrating, or phrase of the language, but I think the point is that even if I just completely exclude naked singularities,
yes.
What I can do is take empty ABS and act on it with a diffeomorphism. And usually you would say that that doesn't give you a new state in the theory. But I think the point is that. You want to act on a diffeomorphism that doesn't vanish sufficiently quickly.
What are you holding fixed at spatial infinity? I mean, it depends. What are the gauge transformations of this theory, and what are the?
For you look at the quantum theory, in some sense, you want to have stuff there. I mean, that it looks like the mass equal to zero black hole is not the end of the story.
I mean, the basic point of Brown and Nance is, so usually, like, in flat space, the asymptotic symmetry is the Poincaré group,
right.
Which is the set of diffeomorphisms which hold fixed the boundary. And you might think that the symmetry group in ABS space would be SL2R times SL2R, if you want to know that. But the whole point of trying to know is that it's not SL2R, it's SL2R. There are more diffeomorphisms that...
It's like the BMS group?
It's diffeomorphisms, if you want to know.
So it's a bit like the BMS group?
It's super generated by the Virchow algebra. Okay.
It's
diffeomorphisms.
Okay.
And so I think you should really think about these other states which I find by acting with these diffeomorphisms. So these are Virchow operators acting on the vacuum. And there are other classical geometries that are singularities.
So it's good that there are very classical geometries because the most treatment in some sense. Okay.
I mean, they're sort of hard to write down.
They're hard to write down, but at the quantum level, in some sense, when you, by looking at the quantum problem, you want stuff there because there seems to appear.
Okay.
Can you write down the metric or the.
Not a metric. Can you give some kind of intuition as to what that geometry is?
Well, I mean, if you just do what Brown and Nance said, more or less. Unfortunately, I can't really, have a good intuition
Is it as it's drawn there that there's a discrete set of states?
There are. These are the set of states which I find by taking my classical vacuum and looking at the Virchow sort of descendants of that vacuum. There's a discrete set of states. I like to think of them as boundary excitations, because there's no singularities anywhere. All you do is you take a diffeomorphism acting on ABS3. It's a completely smooth diffeomorphism, so it doesn't introduce any singularities. But the point is that it doesn't die off sufficiently quickly at infinity so that it would generate, so that it would actually attribute on states.
So in some sense, the geometry is the same, but. I mean, you don't really. Can you write down some of the metric?
The metric is the metric of ABS3, just with a different identification. You know, I'm just doing some
act on it some.
Okay, that's, you're right, no, 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 then
the construction, what is it doing at infinity? I mean, what is it doing metric at infinity? Because he probably wants the whole.
It's redefined, it's essentially, you know, it's a conformal transformation of the torus. It's the conformal, not the torus, the cylinder in this case. It's the conformal transformation generated by whatever various or algebra you're talking about.
But then you would say that they label different boundaries.
The delicate things about what is the misunderstanding between what you've been saying. What, in order to define a good canonical theory, and let's help fix it, the boundary, let's not help fix it. So, for example, in Serena, so asked how to define general relativity, you discovered the ask how to synergy rule is not correct. It's something much more, it's something smaller.
Okay. My understanding is that the analog of the Poincaré group that ADS3 is diff S1, it's diff, not SL2R, but this, but the extension of diff with the whole zero score algebra.
Yeah.
And
so are you talking about just spatial diffeomorphism or space-time diffeomorphism?
It's just spatial diffeomorphism. They correspond to conformal transformations upon the cylinder. And we could talk later if you want about how that might be.
It's like rescaling the radial coordinate by some arbitrary function of position on the boundary, instead of a boundary
expectation.
But this will be important to sort out if you want to compare with ADS CFT, because there might be a subtle difference between what you're holding fixed at the boundary in a few cases.
I think that's precisely the same.
Yeah, and that's going to make a difference between whether you even consider those states or not.
I mean, to answer your question, I think what the metric looks like is exactly the ADS metric, except I act with a conformal transformation. I choose a Virasoro, some Virasoro generators, that corresponds to a conformal transformation, and I act with that conformal transformation.
But is it conformal or vile? I mean, it's not
a rigid conformal transformation. It's
right, exactly.
Well, usually
you might think that that is just some diffeomorphism which acts trivially on the states. But the point of Brown and Minow is that the type of boundary conditions that they're imposing, the boundary conditions are strong enough that it doesn't act trivially on the states.
It changes the energy.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not a space time, so you can't have a time evolution. I mean, it's you know, you can't have as in flat space saying, oh, I do the slice and I keep my initial data, and that's it, because part of the data is exactly on the boundary.
So just, I'm wondering a few more, but just so I can be thinking about it as we go on, what exactly are you fixing at spatial infinity? Is it just
at this stage, in fact, I think we're good here, but in some sense, that's part of the discussion. That is, I want to ask you, what would be a proof of ADS CFT? What should I compute in reality that is the object in CFT? I will make a proposal for that, but I want this proposal to be a starting point of the discussion. So and maybe what I'm going to propose, you're not going to like it, or you want to propose something else. But I think this is part of the question, exactly. What do you do, what type of computation do you do from the bulk of view to compute this CFT? And let's separate that from the answer.
The answer is to the question. So, in order for me to compute the mass, if I want to do it in gravity, I need to make a regularization the way we do in STEM. So, I will get the quantum answers without.
As long as you can regularize that, as long as you include the Gibbons Hawking boundary term, you should get a finite answer.
But I need, in order for me to include the Gibbons Hawking term, I need to include, so that's exactly my point. So I need to introduce a regularized bond. I guess my question is then, so when we have to release the solar generators to get excitations, right, they will probably move the boundary, right, as well.
And they will act on this.
They will, because part of it will be a rescaling of the radial coordinate by some local function. So you're taking this flat regularizing boundary and you're wiggling it. But just the given time won't be enough. You'll have to add another term to do.
So is that actually
if you have a boundary with just a cylinder which has zero curvature, you don't have to worry about the conformal anomaly. Because I'm thinking about a boundary of zero.
Yeah, but it's not just a boundary of strength.
But if the root doesn't come, once you do, then if I think in this perspective, this is sort of a different prescription than what we use to normal ADS.
Right.
So because those are sort of, I would say, almost like a fake state, because, well, I don't know, this is, again, from the perspective of the CFT, it also counterintuitive because this is somehow.
I don't have the CFT there for the regression purposes.
From the perspective of the regularized CFT, but the way how I would do computations on the CFT side, on the gauge series side, I keep my cutoff fixed. And I don't look at the states as some excitation to some crazy states in my field series that somehow will rescale what they mean by a cutoff or moving it.
There is an answer, it seems to me, to your question, if you get the Fermat-Mirabal expansion. Essentially, what you want to do is solve the Einstein equation, but they are second order. And when you do the Fermat-Mirabal, and I'm going to talk about that, the quantum level, when you do Fermat-Mirabal, it becomes first order, and you fix the conformal structure. But then you look at the expansion there, and somehow it breaks down.
The expansion breaks down,
and in order to continue this expansion, what you need to specify, and normally breaks down, because really the second order differential equation, so there should be two initial data, g and the conjugate, but you don't see that just at infinity, but you see that it breaks down, and in order to continue this expansion, you need to specify a projective structure. So really, truly, and the projective structure is a guy that fixes what you mean by SL to z. Invariants, right, or except to C invariants. But they are different. So there's this additional structure that, and if you write down the metric there, in fact, what you would put is that it's true that you can write the general metric, but suppose I put L of U and L of B, and not a constant. Here is putting a constant. A choice of these guys, I think of it, it's like an energy momentum tensor, or a morphic energy momentum tensor, C of U. And this guy fix a projective structure. So the projective structure is something that is, essentially you fix a label of charts on SL2C map. So you see already that I guess that there is some freedom. The BTZ black hole is really when you go to infinity in a straight line. But you can start to go to infinity by wheeling around in a different direction. And that corresponds to to insertions of the energy momentum tensor at the quantum level.
But when you mean break down, does it mean that it's determined up to?
I'm just saying that there is this extra thing, and that is
there is an extra parameter, but I wouldn't say that it breaks down. It's simply that the.
Well, the Fermat expansion does break down.
Okay, so then you're going to show me.
This is Candelis. This is a standard result.
But you just mean the volume you would say the metric.
So I'm talking about the web.
I think it is semantics. But I think you're both saying the same thing.
Okay. I'm still in the preliminaries. But that's a very interesting remark. And maybe people have not looked enough really at the meaning of these things. This vector state, another thing why it's very important is because of the Cardy formula. So the thing is that you have a black hole there, and ideally you expect a black hole to have a radiation locking entropy, which is the area of the black hole, 2 pi r plus over 4g here, or in terms of k, it should be 2 pi k r plus over n. And at the quantum level, you would like to be able to recover this entropy by counting some states. So there's a suggestion that there is somehow a CFT on this gravity, and this is the central charge of the CFT. Now, Cardy formula, tells me how to compute the number of states in for large quantum number, mass. So what I want to do is compute the number of states into the left mover mode at a given value of n plus and n minus, so a given value of the conformal weight. Eigenvalue, well, data plus the eigenvalue plus the minus, and you want this, this object to be exactly the definition of the entropy. And there is a way to compute rho of delta in a conformal theory, which is that the only thing you need is that if you know the central charge and if you know the vacuum state, then you can show that because of modular invariance, this is essentially modular invariance. That enters again, there's no extra assumption. It's purely kinematical, if you want.
So there is one sort of model assumption, which is that you have to assume the theory has a gap between the vacuum state.
So, and somehow normalizable, yeah.
So, for example, on Liouville theory, which people often talk about, that's not true. So,
it's also, there's a gap between the SF4 environment state and the vacuum state of the loop. So the key thing is that maybe what you're talking about, you agree, is that a priori you get that this guy equals like it's proportional to the square root of delta. But the coefficient of proportionality here is c minus 24 of delta 0. So you still have, you know, it's not only because you have, I think in the literature there was some confusion at some point that people were putting C and they were saying this is okay, but if you, for instance, if you put this delta zero to be the black hole, back in the state, then you would find that this guy is one, because it's just 1 degree of freedom, and you call the count for the entropy. So you really, in order to reproduce the definition of the entropy, you really have to assume. So C is 6k, that's 6, but delta 0 is really 0 or minus, you know, minus k. Okay? Well, 0 in this unit, sorry. Yeah. I mean, it's really that you have to include this ADS space.
Do I have to assume that, or can I compute this and find out that this is just the Casimir?
What do you mean? To compute that?
Delta 0, right? Why you keep saying I have to assume that the vacuum energy is not 0.
No, what I have to assume that is the thing is that, and I'm trying to argue that the vector state cannot be the n equal to 0 vector. If I put the vector state to be n equal to 0 vector.
No, but I am asking why you have to assume that.
Well, I have to assume that because I want.
Yeah. No, you can compute and you find. If you have a CFT, then you can go ahead and ask what the vacuum is.
But I can only GR side, like in AGS.
Yeah.
In a global A.
Yeah, so there might be quantum correction, but what you want, all these are classical objects, so C, but what you want is that C minus 24 is 3, you know, half L over G, at least in the semi-classical limit. So if you shift your vector energy by a huge amount, then you will not really reproduce the Brownian result in the classical limit. So that gives a kind of assuming that C the classical limit goes to the Brownian value, which is not moving, then tells me that delta zero. And assuming that I reproduce the right, they can entropy then to a delta zero minor. Now I might have, you know, small quantum fluctuation, and there probably be, but we have
that. Well, I'm sorry, Alex, what's your objection?
I mean, it's not objection, I'm just saying that I don't have an intuition in 2 plus 1, but in 3 plus 1 I would know how to compute that on the video.
Well,
in
2
plus 1 there's
it's just a statement you made that if I want to recover, if I want to write ADS space in the black hole metric, then I have to set the max non-zero, but negative, whatever.
Right, so this is just a question of language. So then it would be just standard computation that would give me the correct answer, which is negative. Okay, so it was just the thing that you don't have to assume here anything. I would say that you do the computation and you find out that the ground state must have a negative.
Yeah, but I want to, I mean, what I want to assume is that the CFT, I want to assume something about the CFT, otherwise I don't know what to say. And I think what people assume, and I was giving the argument, is that C at least goes like 6k, and delta 0 is equal to 0, which means that this vacua is the SL2C invariant vacua. Right. I mean, there's only a priori one normalizable delta zero state, which is the usual SL2C invariant state so this is the only piece of information that I have, and where everybody would say that mean, the, some others, the synthesis state or physics, it's touching the bottom of the spectra, and some of the charge is there. So that's what I wanted to say about it.
But you're saying both of those have a wheel, and could in principle be plus order 1 over k?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So if I put plus 1 over k, which is 1 over k, which is possible, then what I'm saying is that the SN2C invariant state is not my vector. Okay? So, but, you know, that's possible. That's somehow,
you would like to keep that zero, but you're happy to have order 1 over k.
I'm open-minded. In some sense, okay. We're going now to see the hypothesis. I mean, in some sense, you have to start. If somebody comes, and tell me I want to have delta 0 equal to 0, so they said to see the universe is part of the spectra. It is an hypothesis, and maybe, you know, somebody should check it, but I think it's a good, you know, starting point. It's a reasonable hypothesis. But at this stage, I think it is part of the question of the DSTT. Is it true that the set to see by set is part of the spectra and this gap? I always say these are the uncomfortable, you know, everybody, whatever the CFT is, it satisfies that.
Can I ask Alex, do you know these extra states, are they going to be at order 1 over k, or is that the space?
The spacing is order 1.
Order 1, okay.
That's right. Okay. So they will give corrections, but, I mean, you know, the way that this formula is drawn, I mean, you can compute the corrections to the entropy coming from these states, you know, because there's this leading term which comes from a vacuum state, then there are the descendants of the vacuum state, which gives some corrections to the entropy that you can compute. This is sort of, this is the calculation that I didn't have time to discuss yesterday, but you can compute this, and it gives you an infinite series of corrections to the entropy. Okay. Morally speaking, what you're doing is studying the one loop, the determinant around. You know, you're doing a Euclidean calculation of the free energy of the black hole, and then you're starting to determine that.
I wanted to compute exactly what is the central charge on the level, and I had an argument for its value, and what are the, but really don't have time for that. So for the C, I do expect, but I have an argument that there is some correction. And I don't know how to use this. That's all questions I would like to know. What type of information do we know about the next meeting on the collection? What do you mean? Because they contain information about this. So the second thing is that I wanted to make a work. So we can propose a CFT which, you know, is the dual of Peterson gravity, and let me try to, for another specialist, but let me try to present what he has done and point, there is a point where, you know, to look at him. So he has proposed a CFT, so these are the key assumption that everybody agrees on, but he has taken these initial steps, he has given two extra key assumptions or ansatz and he has justifications for it. And under these two key technical assumptions, and the third one, which is purely technical, he can uniquely identify a given CFT. So I'm not going to look at the detail of the CFT, but let's look at the assumption. The mathematical result is that under this assumption, then there's a unique result up to a small, you know, technical reach. That in some sense is fixed by the language you're saying, but it can be the same thing. So what are these two assumptions? The first one is the fact that k is quantized. So that's the assumption one. And then I'm coming back. Anyway, there's lots of physical argument. The second thing is the fact that whatever the CFT is, so now the point is that if you look at all possible CFT of, you know, the fix on charge and the fix with a, assuming, let's say, there's a set of vectors in the unit, there are zillions of them. In fact, it's a big problem for them to be able to classify these objects because they are in principle the sets of vectors of all possible string theory that you know that are consistent, etc. So, we know the classification only when C is more than one, and this is already a big achievement, a piece of work, but in general, it's very complicated. So, of course, I have too many possible candidates, so I need to restrict. And the key restriction is that the CFT is holomorphically factorized.
But I thought that second assumption
required
the first assumption.
Yeah, but let me, agree.
So I think that requires using Euclidean reasoning. Yeah.
No, I agree. But this, there is, this assumption can be, there are lots of arguments in favor of this one.
You can make the first assumption without making the second assumption.
Yeah, exactly. So what Alex is saying is that two implies one. Or depends if I take a positive twist or a negative twist. If k is not quantized, then I cannot have two. Right. So k is quantized. It goes a bit more. What you're saying, well, it's not. I want to precise it. It's not exactly. You can have a quantization. What Williams is assuming is a particular type of quantization. This k is four times an integer. So. And two imply one star. That's okay. And then there's just a technical assumption that if you have the vacuum state, there's a gap about the SL2C1 state, and the gap is. It's just, and the gap should be always bigger than k or k plus 1, the k reason. If you have the gap is exactly k, then if it's uniquely the theorem. Okay. So, but that's reasonable because this gap is, you know, corresponds to the black hole gap case. So, okay, so let's look at, so let me try to. So I have some things to say about one. So let me talk the factorizable. Sorry, I didn't say what I mean. Suppose I take a metric which is of the form, you know, dz plus mu dz bar modulus square, right? The partition function is a function of the of a metric, so it's a function of mu mu bar. So any CFT by the conformal one identity can always be written as a sum of conformal blocks. Kj bar, mu bar, mij bar. And essentially, what does it mean to find a CFT? What does it mean to find a CFT? So these guys, you know, these are called the conformal block. And the CFT, what, you know, what I mean by a CFT that you need to find, especially this the sets of labor that enters there, and what are the fusions of it. Now, holomorphically factorizable means that the partition function is such that it can be written as just, you know, somehow one object, which is the modulus square of the modulus square. So, so that means you take the log of it, you take the second derivative with respect to mu, it's equal to zero. There's no sum involved. Okay? So that's the hypothesis in it. A general CFT is a sum of squares, if you want, and asking that the theory is holomorphically factorizable is that this is just one square. Now, I won't comment too much on to that because I don't understand why. Maybe Alex can comment on that. And he made some comment yesterday that they were able to. So this is a strong idea. in some sense, this is my hypothesis, that in some sense begs for the other, I mean, begs for the answer. So, but this, yeah, this is my hypothesis. I think it's fair to say that.
Yeah. Is that the same as saying that there is only one performance law, or no?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So can I have some, can I have a CI key with an IJ?
Oh, no, because if I had an IJ, no, because you see, it's so you can't get confused. I mean, yeah, it's a bit confusing. Sometimes you can write something, but you can't get confused. Take the log on the CFT, then CFT. And then, you know, d mu square, and this is equal to zero. And if you have a sum of square, you never get that. No, d mu.
Oh, sorry.
You know, d tau square, only the holomorphic derivative. I think the second holomorphic derivative. I mean, just that the log of this guy is s mu plus s mu bar, and there's no constant mu bar. So, you can't get confused.
You're saying that I have only one. I have only one component.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes. So the first one is quantized. So the argument, there's a strong argument into that. But the argument is the following. The first thing is that there's a theorem called C theorem by Zamolochikov, by the Zizi brothers, not the band, but well, yeah, we already know. But the Zizi band. Which essentially tells you that if you have a, so assuming that there's a CFT, if you have a, you try to have a continuous family of CFT so that you get deformed from one to another by shifting the CFT. This is impossible. So there's no continuous family of CFT. So, you know, a priori this means just k is just, you know, the central charge into 6. It means that k should be quantized. It doesn't mean it's an integer, but cannot be continuous space. If you look more closely into the C theorem of Zamolochikov, though, in fact, it contains a key hypothesis. So, no continuous. In fact, the key hypothesis it contains is that if you really have the theorem that you have to assume, so suppose that there exists a normalizable. SL2R invariant state. Okay. So the guy, then there exists no continuous family of CFT. So that means that whatever the CFT is, there's a vector state which is zero, which is the SL2R vector state, and it's gapped. Right. Assuming that there is an SL2R invariant set means that the spectra is gapped near the vacuum state. So the quantization really is, in some sense, an assumption that maybe we can discuss and maybe is reasonable that the vacuum state is, the SL2R vacuum state is a normalizable state. You have example where your continuous spectrum which touch the vacuum state, and then the vacuum state, the SL2R invariant state is a generalized state, but it's not normalizable. So at the quantum level, when I look at transformers quantization, there are clearly two cases of quantization. One is when k is quantized, and one when it's not. And it might be that when k is not quantized, it's one. And it becomes much more complicated. So, but what I can see by looking at naively the quantization is that a priori, well, there's two different cases of quantization. Either k is a rational number or it's not. Right. So that's clearly from the quantum gravity point of view, there's really two different types of quantization. K taking irrational or taking not being irrational. Now,
so here you mean just transcendence theory?
Yes. Yes. Or on the or looking at quantization. I'm just saying that getting irrational. You know, I don't know if it doesn't. You know, I don't know. What I'm saying is that being irrational is a kind of different case. I have to look at it in a different manner. And it might be that it's singular or not, that it doesn't exist. A priori, when I look at these guys, clearly, K rational seems fine, and I don't see any reason to specialize to this particular case. Well, Witten gives an argument why he goes there, and in some sense, and the argument he gives, and the Alex would comment on that, is the fact that using SL2R, it's a non-contractible group. So there's a U1 inside, which is a maximal subgroup, which is non-contractible. And associated to that, there's a notion of a chain class, which is the integral of a curvature inside the group. So there is some type of quantization condition that arises from there. And if you look at this couple constant, naturally sometimes it come in front of the subject here. And if this guy is quantized, then you would need to have, I mean, for this guy to make sense, you really need to have a quantization of K of this form. So that's his argument. I'm not sure I really justice to it, but that's his argument. Now let me look at, I want to make a critique of this argument. And argue that, you know, I justify why I don't see this quantization and I try to help out the theory. I see three points where I could get different answers. So maybe, which is the first point is that if you look at SU2 theory, so let me first look at the reason why in SU2 theory, if you take transcendence SU2 there, the level is quantized. So usually there are different ways to see the same thing. The first thing is that it gives you numbers. Okay? So you have the weight you put is aggregated by you make an SU2 transformation, there is a Bessemino term that arises, it's an integer, which is a compact group, and that's it. In SF2R, well, it doesn't work because it's a non-compact group, essentially. Okay? So this argument doesn't work. The other argument that works is that if you look at wave functions of the torus, it's wave functions. And let's say you get holomorphic wave functions on the space, and somehow you ask that these wave functions do not have any singularity on the classical modular space. So yet there is no singularity on the modular space. No singularity means that you have a kind of holomorphic wave functions and there are points there which classically represent some configuration, but you have that the function is monovalued, do not get phased when it turns around. Now, okay, that's a strong argument. If I look at this argument in the case of SL3R, so a priori there is places where I have singularity in the modular, but these are exactly the places where I know that there is singularity in the classical modular space because it's SL3R. So I can ask that the wave functions have no singularity, but which leads to this condition. But you know, it doesn't really work. Another counter argument is that in fact, when you talk about equivalence with chain assignments, you're really working first at the Lie algebra level, right? So all you know is that you have the Lie algebra SL2R. Now. The point is that at the bottom level, you have to lift that object to a group. And usually, when you quantize, the group you lift it to is simply connected. So the same U1 that calls the chain class V0 is also related to the fact that the SL2R is not simply connected. Okay? So if you take the SL2R N, which is the nth cover of the group, and you say this is the one that really acts as symmetric group at the quantum level. You know, in the same way that when you look at spin, you lift SO3 to SU2, right? There's a phase, and you just resolve that phase. Then in that case, you will get for example, the SM2 cube, where this is the cube power, then you will get the quantization is the one I have. Maybe, you know, P should be even, there's some infestation like that. But
just take the universal.
And, well, yeah, and the universal public. I mean, at the quantum level, the most natural thing would be that, the universal public. But, yeah. So, yeah, and let me go even that maybe, yeah, this will, yeah, that's the way I think, that in principle, there's not even an argument into the fact that they should be rational. I worry that maybe this singularity becomes very nasty, so I don't know. But I agree with you that, you know, you can even make a more strong statement that a priori is not even a... but this is a strong statement about the CFT. The CFT... and one scenario which is possible is that I look at quantum gravity. If quantum gravity exists, for this case and for this case. And so far I don't see why it could not exist for both cases. Right? And then, on this case, I have the vacuum which is gap, and on this case, I don't have the vacuum which is gap. That's the difference.
Regardless of motivation, suppose that we want to ask questions and take an example of a CFT that Vincent gave, I think for k equals 4, yes, this monster group CFT. So suppose that that was the correct thing for that. I mean, what kind of questions can we ask and compare?
Yeah, okay, yeah. So, yeah.
So suppose, and then if it doesn't...
So now it might still be that for k equal... So here the argument, I'm arguing that I don't see any contradiction for k, but it might still be that... let's look at that. Yeah. So it's an assumption. I mean, I'm just trying to point out where exactly I see an assumption and where I see a justification, and maybe... You know, there is an
exercise.
I don't see. Maybe there is one. I absolutely don't. I'm thinking of it as a quantization of the system with a symmetry group. Usually the quantization tells me to choose the universal power.
Yeah, there are.
But there might be. I don't see one.
Just to interject, if you don't see one, could it be that there are many theories here?
Well, I would say that the many theories are even like star matter. So there's the space of theories. And the structure of the CFT and the spectrum of the theory will depend really on the
cosmic. K is a Kaplan class, so of course there are many theories.
Yes. For each K,
but
okay,
there's an argument that you didn't mention, which is sometimes, I don't know if it stands up, but it's sometimes mentioned formally, which is that these theories, the patterns of these theories, that's trans-Simons theories with Lorentzian kind of gauge groups, should have infinity continuations to the pack gauge groups, that is the infinity continuation in the pattern of the SU2, in order that thermal states exist, because thermal Green's function should be computed by a Euclidean pattern. And you can therefore argue that if there are thermal states in Lorentzian theory, there must exist a good path angle in the Euclidean version, which is the SU2 version. And therefore, the quantization rules that are forced on by the patterns of SU2 are forced on the Lorentzian theory.
Maybe, but there are lots of assumptions, and one thing that doesn't work in what you're saying is that the assumption is that. And maybe that's a good argument, there is the assumption that there is a Euclidean gravity. But the thing is that the analytical continuation of lambda negative Lorentzian is lambda, it's this hyperbolic here. And hyperbolic space, and the symmetry group, and the symmetry group of hyperbolic space is SF sub C, and it's not SU2. So when you go, it's not going to be SU2.
Good,
yeah.
So the argument I gave is only good for positive cosmological constant.
For positive cosmological constant, then that's a strong argument, I agree. Yes.
Good, okay, thank you.
Yes. In that case, SL2 avoids this argument. So I don't see any. Just enter how you. What type of computation should you do in quantum gravity? So this is my discussion of the other.
So if there was really no restriction on which kind of SL2 you had, you could define a theory for any value of k.
then...
Anybody with Q or K?
Anybody with K.
Sorry, anybody.
Yeah, I mean, at that point, you could take universal cover, that's what's going on, and then have continuous coverage. And that would really be a contradiction with the secret.
With the what?
With the topological constructor.
No, it really could tell you that. So it will tell you, no, I would say that if they, what it will tell you, there's some type of pattern.
You meant to, well, I guess I don't see why.
So it will tell you, what I would say, that if you get the CFT and you compute the spectra of the CFT, it's, you know, it might look like that. You know, a discrete spectra has some type of continuous power, but it's gapped. But if K is irrational, I would expect, I don't know if it, I mean, maybe K cannot be irrational. Then the spectra...
I guess I don't see a reason why, if you're allowing yourselves to take finite covers of SL2R, why you're not just allowing yourself to take the universal.
Yeah, so if you take the universal cover...
Once you're taking the universal cover of SL2R, there seems to be a pretty sharp contradiction.
Yeah, but it corresponds to K irrational. So if K is not rational, you will never see the universal cover. You will see only the ends. So, what you can see... So if K is of the form P or Q, the effective symmetry group is SL, the Q covering of SL2.
I guess all I'm saying is that if I'm taking the universal cover of SL2,
yes,
K can be any real number.
Yeah, so...
And that's a contradiction with the C.
No, that's what I'm saying. What it's saying is that, what it means is that there is no... So K rational means... It's not directly a function. Maybe it is. So there is no normalizable.
You can add a SL.
Right, so that's the key thing. There's no normalizable SL2C invariant state.
In SL2R.
SL2R invariant state.
So that would
and
so the SL2R invariant vacuum state is what we call an inducer space.
Yeah, so it would be in this theory some type of you can view it as a generalized state, as a distribution on your input space, but not as an analyzer.
So what might be possible?
I mean, physically it's not good.
So one possibility is that you might be able to formally define such theories by taking SL2R, but they don't have ADS space.
Yeah, I would say the limit Q goes to infinity from the it's pretty widely.
So what you seem to be telling me is that if I just take the universal cover of SL2R, you can define formally a theory, but anti-de-Sitter space is not a state of the universe.
No, what I'm saying is that I was saying more that if I work with this quantization, okay. I don't know the finite. I don't find a discrete.
So when Q is finite, you do have an SL2R invariant vacuum.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's consistent with the CCU. I mean, sometimes.
Okay, no, with Q is finite. Right?
Yeah. With Q is finite, so you won't.
Now I'm confused because now you're saying K can be any rational number.
No, I don't know. So I'm saying, suppose I restrict to only K being irrational, I don't know if it can be that. Or it can be any irrational number, yes. But it's not a continuous family.
I would have thought that even that.
And maybe
I would have thought that the constraint on central charging, two dimensional conformal field is stronger than just the statement that they can be continuous. But that even having on a rational, I mean, what if I hand you a rational number, can you construct a CFT with that rational number as its central charge?
How about a nodule theory?
But I want a normalizable ground state. I want a normalizable SL2R invariant ground state. I suspect that even that is not allowed. I don't. I mean, certainly in four dimensions, there's the same maximization preclude that. Alright, assume that two dimensions is even simpler.
Yeah, minimal model.
Yeah, minimal model. But what's wrong with you getting any rational one? The point is that you can't get any rational.
No, I can get a rational, not that minimal. I don't remember exactly, but the formula for the central charge.
Pretty good idea. If you take a U1 field and you can come back to find and put some twist field, you know.
If I take OB4.
OB4 is this. I mean, the Q1, you know, perfectify the end, make it end scoupling and do that. I mean, you know, that's efficient. There's nothing more to do.
But I mean, if we don't have an SL2R in very vacuum state, I thought that to compare with classical solutions, you have to take anyways k to infinity. Isn't that the case? We have to take a large cosmic constant. So.
But it doesn't mean there's no state. It means that, you know, it doesn't mean that there's no state. There is no state.
Yeah, but it's not SL2R invariant.
No, it's not normalizable. So
there will be no some normalizable, but it would not be SL2R invariant. That
No. There exists an SL2R invariant state with a distribution state.
But there should be some normalizable state on the theory. So.
Yeah, of course there are many. But you know, it's just the fact that the eigenstate spectra, in some sense, yeah, really, and I'm happy to. There is a good physical argument to cause these species. I would be happy. It's just that. Is the assumption, are the spectra of the energy discrete or continuous?
Right. So the key was on this side, you have a gap.
Yes.
And so the vacuum is gapped away from the next.
Yes.
And here it isn't. So when you say non-normalizable, there might be some measure where you have something like a delta function.
Yeah.
So in fact, in string theory, that's what we have all the time.
For non-compact, yeah, I agree, yeah.
Okay.
The topic space is not compact, the set to our, the set to our vector is not normalized.
So we shouldn't be that scared of it.
No, I'm not.
But you're objecting, so, You.
Well, usually we have a non-compact space, and you have a continuous spectrum. The free energy is infinite. What's finite is the free energy per unit volume.
Okay.
And so, I think the same is that any sort of quantum field theory in space, for example, if you put it in a finite dimensional space, if you put it in a finite volume space, then you have a discrete spectrum and a finite free energy. And so, it's a continuous spectrum.
But usually you divide out by
function zero. It's being infinite.
Usually you divide out.
That's not the sort of system that I was looking for.
This theory is no longer to be computed because I don't have a free energy of that size. It is not the.
So maybe this is
not a big.
From bottom field, you don't have the continuum of space anyway, right? What Alex said, that there is some a gap on the one. I put a space to the block. So you don't really think it could be
as Rob is saying, there's many theories which are quantum spectral. Of course, somehow usually what you do is that you have to divide out the volume of the zero, which is the volume of the correlation function, are well defined. You're right that, but usually, to put you have a quantum spectra, so the partition function as a sum of guy, you know, when you take the quantum spectra as a limit of sum, so usually the sum over I of the minus delta I, pi, diverge, the spectra is, you know, evenly, and this is because I have a volume of minus 1, I know that this guy, when the spectra, delta of EI goes to zero, go to an integral, right? And usually this is the guy that you call the partition function. Of course it's not, you know, there's this infinite volume factor, which is essentially delta of zero here, or which is the volume of your phase space. So the partition function is not exist, but the density of free energy does exist. So, if you have a big space for you don't define the total free energy, you can define the density. You get to define the density of energy, and maybe for some reason the CFT here should not have that. And I would love to have
that. CFT on a circle is a finite free energy.
Yes. So it demands that, yeah.
And that's just a different case from
here. So, I agree. Here it means that. If it happens, I don't want to advocate that. I'm happy to just say, yeah, but this is already reaching out.
Maybe we can talk about the finite case.
Well, in that thing, Can I ask, if just putting together with things you were saying over there, if I was allowing for Q equals 2,
yeah.
So the double cover, would Brown and Hanau have, I mean, with the actions that they were using, would I have created extra states over there?
That's a good question.
Do you think they would have? So,
well, I guess it's a related question. What are the allowed gauge? So, what are the gauge transformations you're allowing to annihilate physical states near the boundary? That's the question. Brown and Hanau gave us one description for which gauge transformations, which did your morphisms in the gravity language are just gauge transformations in the transcendent.
Right.
We're holding fixed at the boundary. And so I think in order to answer that question, I need to know exactly which gauge transformations are annihilate physical states. Which gauge transformations actually are physical states. So presumably that's something that's going into the definition of your theory of your transcendence.
Yeah. And so the spatial infinity, are you fixing on metric, or are you only fixing
a component? Let's go. Okay. Yeah. That's the question that I want to reflect the question. So what should I do? So the question of, yeah. So,
But before we leave it, I mean, there's a question there. It could have been that there was an assumption here, which essentially said Q is equal to 1.
I don't see why the quantization that goes with the Brown-Hanau states has anything to do with the parameter is going to Q. Because this parameter Q is something that appears when I do a quantization. Maybe I'm missing something simple.
Okay.
Right here. Decided to want this.
Sorry.
I mean, the Brown-Hanau argument is good. It doesn't involve anything specific. Yeah, I mean, it's more or less a classical argument. It doesn't involve anything,
if you start from a different view, you're not going to change your mind when you plot that as a theory, right? I mean, they've settled on what they're going to consider gauge and what's going to happen on stage.
Well, yeah, I guess I would like to know exactly how you're defining your gauge transformation. What gauge transformations of the boundary are you allowing? Which ones are you not allowing? That's the question. Defining a transcendence theory on non-compact spaces is sort of subtle.
It's subtle. Maybe I can start with that a bit of. So I'm going, real time, but there was this question that quantum gravity and transcendental theory are a priori different beasts. And the reason, let me expand on that and make some comments. So there's two types of problems. Why they are not the same is that we know that infinitesimal difero on this side, going this time, corresponds to infinitesimal gauge transformation. Okay, so gauge transformations connected to the identity are the same as, are kind of related to. But this is not true for non-infinitesimal difero. In general, for difero not connected to the identity, then it's different from non-trivial gauge transformation. So there's a subtlety about the principle of what the gauge group is. Right? Because they are not exactly the same. And the type of things that can happen is that you can have two metric here, G and G prime, that are related by gauge transformation. But that are not different. Right? So that can happen. That's a good example. There is an example. I need to find it. So you can find such examples. It's possible to, you know, you need to do this for some weird configuration.
Having a negative cosmological, I mean, that's not...
Well, then, yeah, this is just in general. I'm saying why people do worry about that, but then I want to say why people have worries about that, and there's a collection of results at the end. Okay? So in general, you know, it is a worry, and I just wanted to make the way to worry. The second type of worry is you can have is that you can have two distinct geometries. You know, G and G prime that are really different, you know, that they are different from G and G prime, but you cannot distinguish them. This is kind of the reverse result. You cannot distinguish them by looking at SL2R connector, the gauge theory connection. But they are different as geometries, but they are identical as Chan-Simons fields. That's the kind of two generical type of product. One is that, okay.
How is that different from the little arrow with the 9.4?
Well, no, here I'm saying that here I'm saying that I have two geometry, G1, G2, yeah, it's kind of it's kind of really and it's kind of related, but it's not necessarily that these things are related by in the first case G and G prime are related by non-trivial gauge transformation. But it could even be the case that I have two different geometry that are not, you know, related by gauge transformation, but I cannot really see them okay. There's an extra layer of subtlety like that. For instance, in the case of lambda positive, essentially because we have an SL2C connection, there's a notion of define the space time. So, it's, okay, I don't want to enter into detail. For instance, for lambda positive, it's well known that it's a generical ambiguity, but we know how to deal with that. So, if I give you a Chan-Simons connection, or it's a monomy, then I construct one metric. Then I have a space time from there. From there, I can do some type of grafting. So there's no geometric operation, I cut the cylinder, and I, you know, do some split, and then I get a new space-time. And again, because the anomaly is the same. And I'm not doing a gauge transformation. And so people are worried about that. So a priori, yeah, there is some things to worry. It is in principle two different things, right? But there are some works on that, and there are some results. And in fact, the problem is not as serious as we would do. Another key example, so the first thing is that this type of things, okay, rising lambda negative, if you look, for instance, for lambda positive, lambda negative, or lambda equal to zero, then you can show it doesn't arrive if you don't have any particle. This problem, you know, has been shown to me. It's a beautiful piece of work which started with a word like mess. So people have really studied the 2+1 Lorentzian geometry from the Chan-Simons point of view, and they have done a remarkable job in the pure mathematical literature, and essentially, you know, exploring this way of looking at the geometry. So if there are particles, then there's one example which is known in the literature where you can have four particles, and you can show that you can have this in flat space, and you can show that you can have distinguished the geometry by gauge field, so there's some non-degeneracy. But usually it's kind of a measure zero part of the moduli space, so maybe you should worry about it at the quantum level, maybe not. Another thing which is important, so this is the negative side. Now I'm looking on the positive side. On the positive side, I would say that generally lambda negative no particle.
What do you mean by that?
No on-like defect, no matter.
So that's what we're talking about, right? So the model that you're talking about, you would say the no particle.
Yeah, it's pure gravity.
Right.
Pure gravity. No point-like defect. Maybe I finish on the result. So the result is that suppose you want to look at the one result which is known, and it's important, is that suppose you want to look at this gross surface time interval. Classically, means you take a GMPG surface and you evolve it in your ADL space, and it looks like that. There's an initial singularity in the finite singularity. Then you can ask the question, what is the difference between the gravity point of view and the chance-Simons point of view? So from the chance-Simons point of view, what you would look like is the space of, what is the moduli space of solution? The moduli space of solution is the moduli space of flat SL2R plus SL2R connection on this manifold, modulo gauge solution. Maps from SL2R to the surface to SL2R, modulo SL2R. Okay? And on this case, you will look at, what's called fractional space, and even depending if you divide all that by the large diffeomorphism, of choice, then that's the fractional of the modulo space. So, really, there are two different objects, but you can show that. I talked about this U1 in SL2R, and in some sense it classifies, what you can show that this object is going to be a direct sum of 2 minus 2j components Cn, where the n label the chain number of this U1. So n is some chain class. For you one. And essentially, geometrically, you have to think about, if I have a manifold there, I have a normal vector, so it's kind of U1 which stick around there, and then I have to keep track. If I have a tangent space, then what happens if it's really a manifold, my normal vector is always normal in the same direction. So when I integrate these guys all around, and the normal vector is like a hyperbolic space, so I'm integrating the volume. So you can show that the Teichner component corresponds to this component here, and it's essentially C2G minus 2. It's essentially telling me that I put consistently my tangent space, with the normal. And there's another component which is the reverse orientation, either I put the normal up or down. So you can, it's not that bad. That is, when you contact chance-Simon theory, except for this guy, what you will have is a polarization of all these sectors together. But you have to, you know exactly what you're looking at. And in fact, the way people call that chance-Simons is that in some sense, the simple space kind of to put it on a matrix, and then to discretize it. And it's cute to, this general number is scary, and I'm always scared by that. But let me look at what it means to have a different general number. Suppose I have a, hyperbolic surface there, so which is in the maximum chain class. And I do something weird from the geometric point of view. So I have a listen to our connection. I take a journalistic view, and I make a reflection around it. So then I get a guy which looks like that. What you're doing here is that you're going to lower down the chain number. So the chance-Simons connection with a different chain class really corresponds to a Riemann surface, but really get confused about which is up and which is down. So in the discretization of chance-Simons, it's a discrete ambiguity, so we know how to do that. It's possible to, but it's a discrete, it's not the not fundamental ambiguity. It's delicate, it's subtle, but it's not nothing, this is what I do, that you have to have extra parameter discrete variables that tell you that when I group two triangles, geometrically it is like that, but I just have two ways to do them together, like that, or like that, and I just have to be careful.
So from the basically the difference between what you get from the chance-Simons and the gravity point of view is that your chance-Simons moduli space looks like the moduli space not just of a 2G minus 2 Riemann surface, but also it has lower genus components in it.
Right. No, it has besides the other chain class
numbers. But these other chain class numbers,
they don't really, these other chain class numbers, they don't Geometrically, they are nothing.
But I think of them as sitting on the boundary of technical space where I finish cycles.
No, this is really some, I mean, this is really what you need to do. So, to go from one shared class to another, you would need to do that. So, you know, the boundary is when I pinch this guy. But this is, let's say, this is 3 and this is 1. You know, so this is what it means to change the channel. That's why I need this picture, because geometrically you see what's happening. It's really, a surface is you glue things together. But suppose you get confused, you have a back, and you don't keep track of the orientation. So it's not really the boundary of the universe, it's sitting away. And it's because you see, you just have to, if you take a fundamental domain, which is like that, you know, triangle. Essentially, each time you make a reflection there, you flip that, you do triangles like that, you would create it's not geometrical. You don't want to have that. Another argument, in fact, is that maybe you don't even have to worry about that. Because this is the modular space, this is Schmidl space. So C2G minus 2 is Schmidl. But actually, what I should do is take my modular space here. I'm not out by SL2Z, or the modular for homogeneous surface.
SP is something.
Yeah, the non-trivial diffeomorphism. And then you can show that this is a complicated action of these things, but the action is the ability. I'm not the component except these guys. So that is modular this action, all the ends.
Because you don't get something to see in the mapping class.
What? The mapping can do
it. SP ends.
Okay. Which we have to see in the problems. So we can show that all the ends are mapped to, they are in the same orbit of the mapping class group if n is different.
But from the chain science point of view, is there a good reason to push it out like that?
No, from the chain science point of view, no. You don't have to worry about that. But
this would be an example. Because two elements, if they're related by the mapping cross group, they have the same metric. Those are the mapping cross group.
Yeah.
So I guess this would be an example. We're two different pH. We do things that we think correspond to the same metric, but actually your second pH. I may not understand.
Yeah, I mean, the message I want to say is that it's delicate, but there are a collection, it's a discrete ambiguity. You see a disconnected component, so you have to be careful which one you pick. But it's not that, maybe I'm wrong, but I don't see that as a fundamental. And maybe when there are matter and particle, it becomes to be positive. But for the case of 10, ADS space, pure gravity, I don't see that as a fundamental objection to do 2 plus 1 gravity from the dog using transcendence. You need to have to know what you're doing, and you need to know that you need to worry about this problem. It's not like, it's not a.
It seems the opposite of what you're saying. Before you were saying that there were more diffeomorphisms than things you could get by just gauge transformations, larger and lower. Whereas now, it looks like much less sophistication. Well, we need to pick up real line of lessons here.
Yeah, it's different. Every example is a different geometrical setting. You have to cook up the example for.
Because I'm just a little confused, because from the metric point of view, it's completely clear why you should plot out that mapping class for you.
Yes. So if you want to interpret chain science into our algebraic gravity, there's a certain number of extra discrete operations you have to do on it.
Well, could I ask a question? Are you willing to continue?
Maybe we should stop. I'm
happy to continue the discussion. In particular, Alex is here for a few more days. We could continue now, or we could take a break for an hour and have lunch, or we could take a break at 30 and tomorrow morning.
Let's continue the discussion.
Sorry?
I'm having fun.
Yeah.
And the computation I want to share.
But
we should do it. I'm sorry. Yeah, I don't want to
wait. Would Pico be willing to come back at 4 o'clock today? Would you be willing to come back at 4 o'clock today?